Davidson. I like this Davidson.
It's the Bottom Line Podcast.
With your host,
Davidson Baker.
Nate Diaz, you just shook up the world. How's that feel?
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
What is the game plan going up against him?
The game plan is to go in there, hit him with some good shit, don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash.
It's the Bottom Line Podcast.
With your host,
Davidson Baker.
Surprise, surprise, motherfuckers, indeed. A little bit of Mobb Deep. For those of you that either live under a rock or can't appreciate classic hip-hop, that's Shook Ones, the instrumental to Shook Ones, made famous by Queensbridge finest Mobb Deep from the album Hell on Earth. Felt like it was a good way to kind of have the worlds of one Nate Diaz and New York collide, given the news we were given last night. If you could tell the canvas I'm painting on with this, but I feel like East Coast hip-hop a little bit different from West Coast, but, you know, try to make the worlds merge as best you can. Without further of a delay, welcome everyone to episode number 26 of a podcast I did not plan on doing until probably around the time I woke up this morning. My name is Davidson Baker, and if you do not know, what the fuck is your problem? No, I'm just kidding. If you don't know, at least now you know. I mean, that's the positive part about it. And now you know that this could very well be, and very much so is, the Bottom Line Podcast. And I must be your host, Davidson Baker. Thanks a lot for joining me today. Not going to be one of those episodes wherever I, you know, segue into it by saying, oh, we've got a jam-packed episode for you today. You know, we got a lot of things to go over. This podcast is centralized and surrounding the news that broke last night, which obviously, if you have come this far into the podcast, you must be aware by now. Nate Diaz is back. Holy shit, is Nate Diaz back? And he's got a hell of an awesome fight booked for the UFC 230 co-main event at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. There are a lot of question marks that a lot of fans have. There are a lot of things that many people still have yet to put the pieces of the puzzle together for. And I may not have those pieces to said puzzle, but at least by listening to this podcast, I can help you at least get a little bit better of an understanding of A, where the fuck this fight came from, B, how these two match up stylistically, C, what this means for UFC 230, and obviously D, what the hell does this mean for Conor and Khabib? Let us get started. So, this was initially reported by Lance Pugmire of the Los Angeles Times. Now, there's one of two ways I imagine that Lance Pugmire, who is a phenomenal writer and columnist for the Los Angeles Times, he wouldn't have his job covering what he does for as prestigious a print as the Times if he wasn't, you know, credible and a very valid guy to break such a story. And man, what a sly dog. He kind of just got on Twitter, was like, hey guys, didn't say breaking news, didn't draw any extra attention with superlatives or exclamation points or punctuation marks or crazy pictures or anything that draws the eyes, just kind of like, hey guys, Nate Diaz back. Kind of caught people off guard. Not I, though. I picked up on it right away and wrote my piece for themmatakeover.com. That is up right now. But obviously, as I said, it was first reported by Lance Pugmire, Los Angeles Times. Now, how Mr. Pugmire came across this, obviously, I can never know these things for sure, being that I'm in Ohio and they're in sunny Los Angeles. Fuck my life for that. But the big picture here is Mr. Pugmire, given the fact that he is based out of LA, and given the fact that UFC 227 takes place in LA tomorrow night, and given the fact that here in just about, say, a little over 4 hours from now, we will have one of those big smorgasbord press conference doohickey things featuring a ton of the upcoming headliners and co-headliners and big profile fights. Fighters from red and blue corners alike will be at the said press conference. I would have to imagine that two people's name that landed on the itinerary that obviously popped off the page, for one, like a Mr. Pugmire that saw it, was obviously a Mr. Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier, especially being that Dustin Poirier is fresh off of beating Eddie Alvarez 6 days ago. Regardless, though, this is a win for the sport and this is a win for the fans, so I'm going to get into what this all means. So surprised, though, because, you know, Dana White had been flirting with the fact that we might see Tony Ferguson on the same card as Conor and Khabib, and after Poirier did what he did to Eddie Alvarez, people were kind of like, well, okay, you know, there isn't a fight that makes more sense right now than Ferguson and Poirier. And while that might be true, it's never been about what makes the most sense. Sure, what makes the most sense has a lot to do with it. I'm not saying that the matchmakers and Dana White come together and make fights that make absolutely no sense, because that would be factually inaccurate. What I'm saying is, when it comes to flipping the coin of do we make the fight that makes the most sense or do we make the fight that makes the most money, they're hoping that coin lands side up on making the most money every time. And sometimes if you have to compromise the sense that that could make, so be it. And I think that's what happened here. Poirier being the number 3 ranked lightweight in the world right now by the UFC, Ferguson number 2, and Nate Diaz actually has been free-falling with his inactivity, more so in recent weeks than ever before, and now he is at number 10, behind guys like Anthony Pettis and James Vick, or Ally Aquinta, and tied there with James Vick at number 10. Regardless, it's undoubtable this is a fight that fans never knew that they did want to see, but all of a sudden, we all can't wait for it. You know, the fan reception has been incredible. Because it sounds like what we hope it all is going to be. Just a knock them out, drag them out, throw them to the wolves type of war that Poirier and Diaz are accustomed to giving the fans on a regular, if not more than regular, basis. When you open up the blueprint of this fight and really look into the blood and guts of it too, it's a fascinating matchup to marvel at. And before we get into the specifics of the matchup, two things that I have questions about, because I am not just here to bestow you with whatever my knowledge is worth or however much you give a shit about my knowledge. I'll kind of pump the brakes on the humility card there. But I am also here to let you know that I have questions as well, for I am human. And we humans do not know everything. So my questions are, what do you do with Tony Ferguson? Ferguson's obviously the odd man out here. Once again, proving that interim titles carry no merit. Even to a larger extent at this point. You look at the last 3 fighters to win interim belts. Being Colby Covington, who's getting ready to be stripped. Soon as the main event begins at UFC 228 and Woodley and Till begin to fight for the undisputed strap, there is no need for the interim belt anymore, and Colby Covington will lose his 10 pounds of gold, whether it is justifiable to him as the real champion or not, or whether he doesn't truly believe what his act is bestowing. Then before that, there was Tony Ferguson, who beat a staph infection-riddled Kevin Lee, still a game Kevin Lee. I mean, he had Ferguson mounted in the first round, for Christ's sake, to win the interim lightweight title. He calls out McGregor. McGregor never hardly says anything back. He tweets a Grand Theft Auto themed, I don't know what to call it. I mean, it's not a meme, really. An illustration, an animated Grand Theft Auto themed illustration aimed at Tony Ferguson. That's all Tony got. And then when push came to shove shove came to trip over a Fox cable cord, Tony Ferguson loses the belt. The only one that really saw the benefit of winning the interim title was Robert Whittaker. However, did Robert Whittaker get the fight probably of his dreams as a result against George St. Pierre? Hell, I mean, you could even say that Michael Bisping was one of the fights that's on the upper echelon of the fight of his dreams category. Whittaker has openly said of how much he admires Bisping. Do you think Whittaker, do you really think Robert Whittaker, on the topic of interim titles, do you really think Robert Whittaker looked himself in the mirror the day that GSP put the belt down? He might have been proud of his accomplishments, but do you really believe that Robert Whittaker felt that was the best way to capture the championship? I would be astronomically floored if he had any answer other than hell no. Sure, he's wrong. He's righted that wrong now at this point, despite the fact that thanks to the Illinois State Athletic Commission's foolishness, I don't blame Yoel for missing weight on that day. Your opinion's your opinion. I don't care. It wasn't Yoel's fault. And I'm getting off track here. But, again, to wrap this point in a bow and put it under the Christmas tree, the interim belt for Robert Whittaker on that night at UFC 213 when he won it guaranteed him either a fight with Michael Bisping or George St. Pierre to truly unify the title. And that's the key words right there. Unify the title. Neither Ferguson nor Covington nor Whittaker will have been able to unify the titles. And that brings us back to Ferguson now. Not only is Ferguson not going to get the fight with Connor, as the interim title in the beginning of the whole charade would have indicated, not only does tripping over a Fox cable cord, as unfortunate and so sad as that is, you know, life is life and these things happen sometimes, as unfortunate as that is and how maybe as unfair as it could be to him to take his belt, the division's moved on and the belt has been fought for at this point. So now, you fast forward from the night you won the interim belt and all but secured your fight with Conor McGregor, the biggest fight in the sport, the highest money-making fight in the sport, and then you fast forward yourself 6 months, you're now beltless, fightless, and having surgery. Then fast forward... See, that was in April. Then fast forward another 4 months. So almost 10 months since you basically won the right to fight Conor McGregor. Conor is going to fight the guy that you could not fight if you are Tony because you tripped over the cord instead of you for the undisputed belt that he is wearing that you never got the chance to fight for. And now, on top of all of that, there has been a fight made right underneath the rug of your status at number 2 in the UFC's lightweight rankings that could very well end up having the winner leapfrog you for the next title shot. You know, A wise fairy once said, think positively. Yeah, there ain't a whole lot of positives to get out of that. Oh. So I just received some breaking news on my phone. I will get into that momentarily. When the topic arises, I will just remember those listening to this podcast, I just received breaking news regarding a new fight announcement. And when that time comes, I will poke towards back to then. Okay, this is going by incredibly slow. So let's kind of speed it up here. Another man that's fucked out of this has got to be Eddie Alvarez. And, you know, while it isn't as bad as Tony Ferguson, because Tony Ferguson has done nothing but win fights and get hurt, Eddie Alvarez obviously lost that fight on Saturday night. Now, to whether you call Eddie Alvarez a dirty fighter or not at this point, is to your own individual judgment. Personally, I do not. It's a little fishy that he's been subject of fight-altering illegal strikes in both of his contests with the same lightweight contender in Dustin Poirier. I'm not sure how much coincidence plays into that. And I mean, when you go back and look at the knee in their first fight, when you go back and look at the knee that he landed on Poirier while Poirier was on the ground, come on. I think that was worse than the elbow. Everybody knows you can't knee a downed opponent. I was wondering if he was going to soccer kick him next. Anyway, you got to feel for Eddie Alvarez in a sense that this could be his fight if he would have beat Poirier. And the nature of how he lost to Poirier with the stand-up and the controversy and the, you know, and Mark Henry taking the blame for calling out an elbow and Alvarez acting on instinct, and then they stand up and he gets clipped and that's what cost him the fight and blah, 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 blah. A fight that he might not have even had to have fought if he would have just not thrown the illegal knee in Dallas last summer. It's not good to think on the past, and it's not good to think about what ifs. The wonderful world of what ifs can really trap us sometimes, and it can put us in a dark place. But that's a lot of what ifs for Dustin Poirier to rest his head easily at night. Given his social media posts lately, though, he seems fine. But since this whole podcast has everything to do with the immediate lightweight title picture, given that it's kind of centralized around Diaz and Poirier, pretty much is, these are the people that were just so close to being there. Fans have wanted to see Ferguson and Diaz for a long time too. Maybe those two fight if Diaz wins. I can't see if if Nate Diaz beats Dustin Poirier, who is unbeaten in his last five, winner of 8 of his last 9, winner of 10 of his last 12, and on an absolute tear, finishing his last 3 opponents all in main event slots, all former world champions. If Nate Diaz beats him, he's going to get a title shot. Period. That's enough right there. If you steal all the momentum I previously had just said that Poirier is riding right now, and you are 50% of the 2 highest selling pay-per-views in the history of the company, regardless if Conor McGregor was your dance partner or not, you're getting that title shot. So, anyway, to wrap up the Alvarez point, I mean, Alvarez has been talking about this Diaz fight for a long time. He's been calling him out for a long time. And what might be more painful than anything else for Eddie Alvarez, who I'm sure could have made a lot of exceptions and or taken a few less incentives or clauses in which incentives become available, had Dana White called him up in a hypothetical world that he beats Poirier and said, hey, Let's talk new contract. Want to fight Nate Diaz at MSG? Man. Gotta be tough for Alvarez. And as for Ferguson, I well, what do you do with him? He looks healthy. The dude's a freak. He's already getting... I just saw him on Instagram kicking the bag. Not only kicking, because, you know, hitting the bag. Throw on the gloves. You hit this big bag right in front of you. Ferguson is kicking this motherfucking bag so hard that he slits it in half, and it just starts oozing out the inside contents of this bag until Ferguson's had enough that it's even still hanging to the chin. I mean, bottom line, Ferguson could probably fight in 2 months if they gave him a contract. You know. Only fights that make any sense for him in the anytime near future would be a Kevin Lee rematch, or like maybe the Justin Gaethje James Vick winner. I mean, I don't know. They'd still be all the way down there at 6 or 7. And Barbosa's at 6, and Ferguson already beat him. I guess what could make sense too is to give Tony maybe the Conor Khabib loser. No, but I don't. But it'd be a lot more likely if it were Khabib. I just do not see there being any benefit for Conor McGregor coming off if he were to lose to Khabib. I do not see any benefit and under any light of any sun on any planet in any given circumstance why taking a fight against Tony Ferguson would be a good idea. I just don't. If a belt is on the line, obviously there's moving parts to that. And the last thing we want as fans, please God, the last thing we want as fans is to see Conor McGregor win another belt and then just sit on it for another year and a half and get stripped. God, I hope that doesn't happen again. All right. My family's waiting on me because I need to be golfing today for celebrating my birthday. I turn 22 tomorrow, so wish your boy a happy one. Let's talk about this matchup. Poirier and Diaz is an incredibly intriguing stylistic matchup. From what I've taken away from my initial reads on social media and the reactions and takeaways from the Twitter Einsteins of the world, a lot of people like Dustin Poirier to win this fight. And I would say that's a fair assessment. There is a lot more in the corner of Dustin Poirier right now that would help give you hard evidence as to believing why he is going to get his hand raised after 3 rounds as opposed to Nate Diaz coming off a 2-year layoff and a loss. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty of this matchup, though. And this is where I will disagree with some of the things that I've read. I've read things on Twitter such as Diaz has no shot. He's been out too long. Poirier is on another level right now. Diaz will not be able to keep up the pressure. Poirier should melt him. If you think Dustin Poirier is going to walk into Madison Square Garden like a goddamn flower girl at her older sister's wedding, prancing around, jumping around, smiling, and gazing into the moment, and just walk through Nate Diaz as if it were just a fucking date for lunch. Have you ever seen an Nate Diaz fight in your life? Have you ever seen it? If you really believe that to be true, do you know who Nate Diaz is? Is my question. You're not just going to walk through Nate Diaz. The closest thing to anyone I've ever seen walking through Nate Diaz might have been RDA, but RDA had to leg kick, leg kick, leg kick, leg kick over and over and over and over again before he could kind of, you know, bust through the revolving door of Nate Diaz. That's not walking through Nate Diaz. You don't walk through Nate Diaz or Nick Diaz. You don't walk through a Diaz brother. You just don't. You don't walk through a guy that has more fights on off of his record, but on camera against random people alike, other lightweight contenders in the UFC, like Khabib, like Clay Guida. I mean, you look at this guy and blink at the wrong amount of velocity, and he's immediately ready to start throwing hands with you. I mean, that's just a fact. So you're not going to walk through Nate Diaz. And while talk of street fighting has nothing to do with what stylistically makes up who will win this fight inside the octagon, let's venture more towards that. So Diaz has the 3-inch Diaz has the 3-inch reach advantage and height advantage. Diaz, being obviously the bigger fighter, being the guy that has fought at welterweight in the past, and we'll get into more of that as we'll get into more of that in a moment. And that's why these weight classes are fun, and that's why the addition of like women's flyweight, for example, is fun. You get to see the traffic merge from 115 and 135 all into one nestled cocoon. And that's lightweight's role in the very stacked crop of fighters in what largely is the average size of the average male, in between what featherweights and welterweights look like. Not everyone looks like a middleweight, and not everyone looks like a bantamweight. It's between featherweight and welterweight where we all kind of look, I mean, obviously not all, but like where a large percentage of male men in the world are shaped and sized. Nate Diaz coming down from welterweight as far as being able to fight at welterweight, and Dustin Poirier having cut to featherweight before. Don't let that fool you, though. Dustin Poirier is still a very big lightweight, and that's still a massive cut. He mentioned multiple times last week that this was a really tough cut for him. Diaz as well, when was the last time he made that cut? I'm going to fact check that right now, because obviously his last two fights being with McGregor. So Michael Johnson, the fight where he made the call out of McGregor. Nate Diaz has not had to cut to 155 since December of 2015. That should be interesting. Now, about Diaz at welterweight. Technically, he's 14-9 in the UFC, but I really don't count those fights at welterweight sometimes. He just did not look, I don't know what it is, because a lot of guys, you know, cut less weight, and they're animals. Anthony Johnson is a good example. Dan Hooker is a brilliant example. I mean, Dan Hooker's a perfect example. There aren't a lot of people that will have more success with the shark-infested waters at lightweight than at featherweight. Nothing against the featherweight division at all, either. It's a very stacked and tough division there in their own right, but we all know how tough 155 pounds is. And Hooker looks better than he ever has before because he's cutting less weight. Yet, nope, Nate Diaz, opposite. That's the thing about Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz is against the grain. Nate Diaz is against the norm. And what brings me to my next point is if you really want to bring up the ring rust point and say that ring rust is ultimately what's going to cost Nate Diaz winning this fight, why do you think ring rust is going to play any factor into Nate Diaz? The only bit of ring rust I could see having any type of determining factor play out inside that fight is maybe a slight tactical awareness edge for Poirier. And when I say slight, like I mean very slight. That's it. Guys like Nate Diaz, they don't get ring rust. I mean, I'm saying this right now surely based off of the demeanor and the attitude and the type of person we all know and have come to love Nate Diaz to be. We're talking about ring rust. Again, if you tell him that you like the coat he has on, if you walk up randomly to Nate Diaz in the street and say, hey man, I like the coat you have on, there's a great chance he's going to take that as, fuck you, buddy, let's fight. You think he's going to... Ring rust? No, not buying it. Against the grain. Opposite. An opposite thing about Diaz. Found less success at 170 than he did at 155. If you throw out his welterweight record in the UFC, he's 12-6. 12-6 in the UFC. And let me just say this. Before I read to you those six losses at lightweight, I never normally highlight when I'm trying to make a case for a fighter, and the narrative I'm hammering at right now is trying to make a case as to why on earth anyone would see this matchup on paper and say, oh, Poirier's got this fight now, that's not going to, yeah, and I mean, Diaz, I mean, ring rust, yeah, okay. All right, buddy. Maybe what I'm hammering at right now is kind of like a memoir to you idiots that think like that. Okay, we'll go with that. All of that being said, I never normally read off a guy who I'm trying to make points for. I never read off usually a guy's list of losses and tried to use those said losses as helping and mitigating factors into my argument. However, here are Nate Diaz's six UFC losses at 155 pounds. Benson Henderson, former UFC lightweight champion. Rafael Dos Anjos, former UFC lightweight champion. Josh Thompson, former Strikeforce lightweight champion. Clay Guida, former Strikeforce lightweight champion. Gray Maynard, former two-time UFC lightweight title challenger. And asterisk, a lot of people thought he should have become lightweight champion in that epic second fight with Frankie Edgar. And Joe Stevenson, I believe also two-time UFC lightweight champion. I'm going to fact check that though right now because that's going to bug me if I don't figure it out for sure. Every single one of the guys he has lost to at 155 in the UFC has either won or fought for a major organizational title. That's crazy, though, if you like can't remember it off the top of your head that Clay Guida was the Strikeforce lightweight champion. He took it from Josh Thompson, too. If you didn't remember... Whatever, there's a little bit of history for you. And fact-checking myself, Joe Stevenson only was only challenged for the belt once in what was one of the most disturbing fights I've ever seen in my life. One of the most bloody as well. Might have been the most disturbing where he lost to BJ Penn. Anyway, switching gears to talking about Poirier. Poirier is a very crisp and clean combination style boxer. Did you see some of the combinations he was throwing at Alvarez, man? Let me cancel that out. Did you see the combinations he was putting together against Justin Gaethje back in April? Dude, like 6, 7, 8 punch combinations. They were starting to get into the double digits. I mean, he's throwing dozens and dozens of strikes in this perfectly cohesive, just masterpiece. Just bunches them up in these combinations and stays right here in this little pocket and just boxes the shit out of his opponent. That's one thing I gotta say about Dustin Poirier, man, is in his last three fights, where as I previously stated, three straight main events, Three straight finishes over former world champions. Whether you take Justin Gaethje's World Series of Fighting Lightweight World Championship seriously is your decision. But Pettis and Alvarez are still in there as well. And a lot of people are like, that Pettis win wasn't all that impressive. I don't know, after what Pettis did to Chiesa, what do you think about that Pettis win? Poirier might be if not the most impressive fighter dating back to last November, and will be able to have wins over Pettis, Gaethje, Alvarez, Diaz in a span of a year if he wins this fight. However, Poirier's last two losses have both come against southpaws. McGregor, not the longest and rangiest southpaw, also given that fight was at featherweight quite a ways back. But the Michael Johnson fight, while not super recent, it was, I think, end of 2016. That was the main event in Hidalgo. I think it was end of 2016. But those types of guys typically end up being who gives Dustin Poirier the biggest, not only the biggest problem, but the biggest set of problems when you are trying to, you know, analyze and pretty much outdo the person in front of you. And why I say that is basically why some people could even make the case that Nate Diaz is a really bad matchup for Poirier. Not only is he a long and rangy southpaw like a Johnson, like a McGregor, Diaz is taller. Diaz is longer than both of those guys. And he will be taller and he will be longer than Poirier. Just like Poirier can box, Nate Diaz can box his ass off himself. The fight goes to the ground. Poirier talks a lot recently about how he just got his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Hey, man. You don't want to fuck with Nate Diaz on the ground. See, all these things that I'm pointing at and all of the darts I'm throwing at the wall are all sticking to the consistent narrative that Nate Diaz wins the matchup battle. And that might be true. And while I do, and while I really do believe and really am set center on the argument of ring rust not affecting Nate Diaz, I again go back to the only thing that I could maybe hear out on that, on any type of base near that point, is that the fight IQ and technical awareness and stylistic savvy that Dustin Poirier contains can give him a little bit of an edge. Okay, Nate Diaz isn't going to just go out there and have a clunker because of ring rust. Like, that's just not going to happen. It's just not. Especially 3-round fight? Get out of here. I have made this case for Nate Diaz to you. And you probably think after hearing me say all of this and listening to why Nate Diaz probably at the end of the day is a bad matchup stylistically for Poirier, despite the fact that Poirier is hottest he has been in his entire career, yeah, I gotta go with Dustin. I do not think either of these guys are gonna get finished though. I think this has bloody war, fight of the night, maybe even fight of the year written all over it, and I do think that that fight is going to see the scorecards, especially if it's a 3-rounder. If it was a 5-rounder, I might have a different opinion. But I could see both of them surviving each other's big shots for 3 rounds. To be honest with you, I think Diaz's best chance to win this fight is by submission. I really do. If Diaz would be able to use the length that he has and those long legs to cinch up a triangle while Poirier would make a mistake while in his guard, or, you know, I don't know. But Poirier's jiu-jitsu is, he's no slouch with his jiu-jitsu either. Promise. So I'll wrap up this stylistic talk, go over a couple of things about my podcast yesterday, and then talk about what this means for Conor and Khabib, and we'll wrap it up. Family's still waiting on me. And I'm not really going to go into depth here. I'm just going to give you pros and cons for both. Pros for Dustin Poirier. Diaz is a huge name. Obviously, fighting at Madison Square Garden, this is a gigantic platform. Going to check right now, because I don't really believe off the top. I don't know if Dustin Poirier has ever co-headlined a pay-per-view card before. He's headlined a ton of fight night cards, but I know he's never been headlined a pay-per-view. He's never fought for a UFC title. But I don't believe he has ever been as high as co-main event on a pay-per-view, let alone co-main event at MSG with no title stakes involved, where the last two cards at MSG had three title fights. It's a big spot for Dustin Poirier. And where that falls into the pro for Diaz is I believe that the Conor fight's enough. The Conor fights felt like title fights enough, whether they had... I mean, and Conor was technically the featherweight champion at the time. Obviously, they were fighting at fucking 170. But those fights were so big, and obviously, if you don't believe me, the pay-per-view numbers will prove it. That those fights were so big enough to... I mean... Hell, they did more pay-per-view numbers than any title fight ever did. Who's to say that those fights might not have been bigger? Just for bragging rights. Just for the rivalry. Just for the sheer outcome. So that's a big pro for Diaz. He's been in bigger fights. For certain. Cons. Also, though, I will say this. Another pro for Diaz. Really triumphant way to return. I feel like all the fans love this fight and feel like all the fans have gotten back on the Diaz train thanks to him finally coming back to take this fight. I think this fight is a much better... I like this fight a lot better than I would have liked the St. Pierre fight, especially at 155. Am I the only one that thinks George St. Pierre making 155 sounds insane? Am I the only one that thinks that sounds absolutely fucking nuts? People are like, oh, GSP's with Conor, it could be. That behemoth of an individual is going to make 155? Says who? No, not buying it. And obviously the biggest pro for Diaz here is if Diaz were to beat Dustin Poirier in a fight that he is obviously going to be the underdog in, and I know I've said this already, if Nate Diaz can come off of a two-year layoff off of back-to-back biggest pay-per-view sales fights, main events, headliners, history-altering, timeline-changing moments, and just comes in and beats a guy who's finished three consecutive world champions in a row, undefeated in his last five, winner of eight of his last nine, winner of 11 of his last 13, Nate Diaz is getting that motherfucking title shot. Doesn't matter who Tony Ferguson is or what he says or what he does or if he beats someone in between. If Nate Diaz beats Dustin Poirier at Madison Square Garden, especially if he finishes him, God, if he finishes Dustin Poirier, you best believe Nate Diaz is going to fight whoever wins between Conor and Khabib. I guarantee it. Now the cons. Cons for Poirier. Sure, this is a huge name and this is a big opportunity and this is, there is definitely not another name without title stakes attached to it that you could offer Dustin Poirier on a contract, especially hearing the words he said at the post-fight presser where he said that, you know, if it's not for a world title, he's probably not picking up the phone. there's definitely not another guy with no title stakes attached that you are going to get a phone call from Dana White from to offer as far as a fight is concerned. There is definitely not another guy in that division that not only moves the needle, but changes the narrative of the situation. If Dana White calls Dustin Poirier and offers him any other fight in the lightweight division outside of Khabib the champ and Conor, obviously, the fight that makes everyone rich, and obviously a fight that he would love to have back, there is not another guy at 155 pounds that Dustin Poirier is going to say yes to other than Nate Diaz. So I thought this was a brilliant move from the UFC. With the knowledge that you don't think you're going to be able to get Poirier to say yes to anyone else, I can just imagine it now. They're sitting in the matchmaking room and somebody probably raised their hand up and was like, yo, what about Nate Diaz? They're probably like, ah. So, cons for Nate Diaz. Obviously, he's facing a guy in Poirier who's on absolute fire. I hate to beat these stats into the ground, but I will say once again, Poirier, unbeaten in his last 5. 3 straight finishes over world champs. 8 wins in his last 9. 11 wins in his last 13. And I know I said ring rust isn't the type of stigma that could affect Nate Diaz. But, you know, American Top Team is another hot topic right now. Another hot general area of success right now. Those guys down at American Top Team, they're getting their hand raised. How many American Top Team fighters are fighting tomorrow night? Or better, how many American Top Team fighters fought last week in Calgary? Okay. Poirier 1. Joanna 2. I think that's it, though. Yeah, that's it. 2-0, though. I've been noticing that with those guys lately. Those guys are on fire down there. If you have an American American Top Team logo anywhere across your body, you're probably doing pretty well for yourself inside that cage. So, I want to ask those of you listening as we begin to segue away from the matchup talk and into the latter part of this podcast. If you listened to my podcast yesterday, I want you to take the information you heard from me about my questioning of how they were going to do a huge 12 to 14 chair press conference with upcoming headliners and co-headliners alike when the only confirmed people coming are Woodley, Till, Hunt, and Olenek. Yeah, you can throw that all out the window right now. Because yesterday made official, the UFC will make its debut in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. That was not what was made official yesterday. What was made official is that Anthony Lionheart Smith can go from light heavyweight debut in June to number one or number two contender by the beginning of November, as he will take on Volkan Ozdemir in the main event of UFC Fight Night 138. Those two are scheduled to be at the press conference today, along with another bout made official. Luke Rockhold and Chris Weidman will run it back. Derek Brunson and Israel Adesanya are going to be there. I cannot wait to hear those two talk. Diaz and Poirier are going to be there. And one thing I said yesterday, one thing that I brought up that I was skeptical about, is we seem to be getting kind of close to that Sao Paulo card. Why is there no main event for that Sao Paulo card? And I shit you not, when I began this recording, I had it typed out in my outline. I'm looking at it right now. My outline says, quote, still no Sao Paulo main event though, ? However, since I hit record to begin this podcast, that has changed. And that is the fight I am talking about from earlier. The UFC Sao Paulo main event, in case you are not aware, And in case you are listening to this podcast a little late, Jimmy Manoah and Glover Teixeira. If you noticed that I might have said that in a little bit of a droopy tone, I did. Only because of Glover Teixeira, though. He's turning around real quick off a performance that he looked real sloppy in. Now, two of his last three fights have been losses. One a devastating knockout. He will have a home game, though. Fights better in Brazil. Regardless, that card needed a main event bad. And Manoah was probably ready to go. So, interesting, though, that Teixeira is going to turn around that quickly. Fight twice in less than 2 months. So, all right. So let's finish off this podcast with what this means for Conor and Khabib. So we're going to play a game here. So obviously the big question mark with Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier being the co-main event, the biggest question I have, without any doubt, is if you are going to, especially being that you break into the New York market as mixed martial arts as a whole with the UFC just two years ago, with New York becoming the last state to legalize it, you got to go in there with a bang. And that they did. Three title fights, biggest gate in UFC history in the world's greatest arena. Conor McGregor, Eddie Alvarez was the headliner. Tyron Woodley, Wonderboy 1 was the co-main event. And Joanna Jacek, Karolina Kowalkiewicz was also on that card. So, what do they do the next year? The return of George St. Pierre and Michael Bisping. Then you have Dillashaw versus Garbrandt 1. Can't wait for that fight tomorrow night, by the way. And you also have Joanna versus Rose 1. So what's the trend we're obviously noticing here? Need to bring three title fights to the Garden. Got it. That has been canceled this year, though, with Diaz and Poirier's booking. So we're going to play a game. Obviously, the big question is, with a fight as big as Diaz and Poirier, with that also, if you really think about it, being one of, if not the biggest fight you could possibly make, not named Conor versus Diaz 3, that had no title stakes attached to it. Biggest fight you could possibly make that isn't Diaz Conor 3, with no belt on the line. You could make a damn solid good case that this was it. Main event's got to be a bigger fight, right? And all signs and all negotiations and all whispers and murmurs and talks and whispers out of the grapevine have said that Conor and Khabib are... That fight's going to happen in Vegas. One pay-per-view earlier, UFC 229. Personally, if I was the UFC, that would be the route I would select to go. Because you're going to have a shit ton of exposure on this card at MSG, obviously, with the de facto middleweight Grand Prix on top of this Diaz-Poirier fight. Do you really, obviously, you could always use Conor McGregor in any situation in that fight with him and Khabib. Sure, I mean, you could make the argument all those fights all on one card. I mean, could do astronomical numbers. But we all know Conor McGregor doesn't like big names on his undercard. And Conor McGregor's words carry weight. All that being said, what fight could you possibly book for the main event if Conor and Khabib are fighting a month earlier? However, even if they're not, let's analyze the situations. Obviously, a main event would have to be a title fight, okay? So, Let's go up the ladder. Let's knock it out right now. The only women's fight on earth you could possibly make that would headline an MSG would be Cyborg Nunes. Scale of 1 to 10 on how likely that would be, I would give it a 3. From what it seems, Amanda Nunes is dead set on having the most amount of time to not only recover and replenish from her foot injury in May, but having enough time to strategize and try to come up with a game plan as to how to deal with, because you're not just going to beat Cyborg, you're going to have to weather some type of very violent and painful storm. Good luck with that. That would be the only women's fight, period, ever, that could headline at MSG, ever. Unless Ronda Rousey was, you know, still undefeated and had 12 title defenses. Okay, so now let's move up the ladder. Men's. Flyweight, not happening. Bantamweight, extremely unlikely. I think the only case on planet Earth that you get a bantamweight title fight headlining at MSG in a couple of months is if Garbrandt wins tomorrow night quickly, neither of those guys are hurt, and they're ready to run it back at the conclusion of the trilogy. I mean, it'd be a cool story. You could conclude the trilogy where the trilogy began, and all of the baggage and the history and the former trading partner stories and the who dropped who in practice and the who grappled to, it all comes to a head in the world's most famous arena and the same place it started just a little over a year ago. Crazy, too, a trilogy being done in a year. Like I said, extremely unlikely, but it would be an incredible story, a storybook ending, no matter who ended up taking the trilogy. But yeah, I don't see that happening. Featherweight, it's an interesting topic to have. If Holloway's healthy enough, I see Holloway kind of probably being out towards more of that December-ish range. If I had to guess, him and Ortega are probably going to headline 231 in Toronto. I mean, I wouldn't be stunned, but I don't know. Then obviously at lightweight, it would make sense to put Conor and Khabib there. It really would. It would make sense to book Conor and Khabib as the main event. Is it going to happen? Who knows, man? And someone texted me something very interesting about it today that I agree with. Do we want the New York State Athletic Commission anywhere near Conor and Khabib? Yeah, how about a fuck no. Fuck that noise. Get that shit out of here. If that commission can cancel a fight after both fighters arrive and dress up and get their hands wrapped and get their braces up and get whatever braces they need to have on and get whatever they need wrapped and in this situation, females, get their hair braided, and for them to look at Jessica Aguilar and say, "Oh, your lips are chapped. No fight for you." We don't need those motherfuckers anywhere near Khabib and Conor. That's an excellent point that was brought up to me today that I did not consider. So, only other weight class that I could see it happening with is 205. Because Cormier has insisted he's going to defend that light heavyweight belt. The million-dollar question is, who the hell is it going to be against? And as the doors continue to close on other contenders, doors pretty much closed on Volkan and Smith at this point. They fight in the main event the week before. And Volkan obviously just fought DC. But all of that being said, it's starting to look like if you're DC, you're headed towards a dead end, and that dead end contains Alexander Gustafsson staring you right in the eyes. I don't know. it overall is a tricky situation. So that leaves us again with Cyborg Nunes. Really, the only plausible options would be Cyborg Nunes, Khabib Conor, Holloway Ortega, Cormier versus to be determined. John Jones 3 by some fucking miracle. So, all right. Well, I feel like I've gotten enough out of my system on the MMA talk today. And I would like to thank you for listening. Let me just remind you guys that a good friend of the MMA Bottom Line and the Bottom Line podcast is BetMMA.tips. The betting handicapper's website is the best in the business. You can take a look at my handicaps at BetMMA.tips/DavidsonBakerGG and check out the site as a whole if you want to get a leg up in betting on your next fight at BetMMA.tips and at BetMMA.tips on Twitter. Quick look ahead to next week. I will be back on Monday for another MMA edition. I will be recapping UFC 227 with Nature of MMA's Matthew Penny and my colleague at MMATakeover.com, William Nock. Then I step out of the MMA. Then I'll be stepping out of the MMA spectrum probably for quite some time, with Lincoln being 3 weeks away. That being said, next Tuesday is my college football season preview special with a good friend of mine, Tyler Rice. Next Thursday, I will have episode 29 with my friend Jared Lyle. We will be doing a 2018-2019 European soccer campaign preview. I can't wait for that. And I'll be joined by a friend of mine, Justin Riggs, to kind of have a freelance, free-based, kickback, whatever type of podcast that I've had a lot more fun doing recently. And that will be next Sunday for episode 30. So 4 podcasts next week. And MMA, my next MMA edition will be Monday to recap 227 with my friends Matthew and William from across the pond. For everyone who helped me today, which is me, myself, and I, and only I would like to thank me, myself, and I for being so great to help myself and I today. And if you see a boy on social media within the next 48 hours, go ahead and wish him a happy birthday. I turn 22 tomorrow, and, you know, whoopee. All right. For myself, me, and I again, this was The Bottom Line, and I will see you Monday. Everybody watching the fights tomorrow night, enjoy them. Signing off.